Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. So this week was the Oscars 2024. We are reacting to the biggest night in Hollywood. We're breaking down the winners and what last night means for the film industry going forward. So, Dale, just overall general thoughts about last night's ceremony.
I thought it was probably one of the better ones they've had in recent years. I'm a big proponent, a big fan of the idea of having recent winners up there presenting the awards and also highlighting each actor. It's kind of more, makes it a bit, well, not just an actor, but each project. You know, it kind of makes it more personal and than just watching a slideshow of clips in a way. My only big thing is, I'm not a fan of Jimmy Kimmel. Like, why does he continually get the Oscars? And when you had people like, oh my gosh, what's his name?
John Mulaney.
Yeah, John Mulaney. Like, you had John Mulaney come up in when he's talking about screenwriting and he's talking about dialogue and stuff, and that joke hits. That joke is perfect. And then I have to go back to Jimmy Kimmel, who just dry making jokes like he's talking about Robert Downey Jr.'s past, like what that everybody knows. And you can see Robert Downey's like, oh, that's kind of too on the nose. And he goes, oh, that's a cocaine joke. I'm gonna keep going. And like, he drags it out a bit too far. Then you got the end where this feud between him and Matt Damon, you end with the Oscars and the dog from An Enemy of Fall peeing on his star. Like come on. John Mulaney should host next year. I'm kind of like, I guess because Jimmy Kimmel's their ABC's main talk show guy or late night guy, he gets a spot kind of like with all the other award shows, their main talk show person gets it. But Jimmy's not that funny, to be honest. So,
yeah, I feel like that's the general consensus, is like, we're done with Jimmy Kimmel. Let John Mulaney host the Oscars next year. I'm campaigning for it. Let's make it happen. I think
let's start a petition.
Let's start a petition. I want him hosting the Oscars next year. But yeah, I didn't even really watch it. So yeah. I was just like, I can't be bothered. Mainly because low-key, most of our predictions were right. So I was like, oh, okay. Fine. Snapped. But yeah. And from what I can gather, it seems like a decent Oscars. Like, nothing crazy happened. You know, there were some pitfalls here and there, Jimmy Kimmel being one of them. But overall, it seemed like a decent show. So good. I think they needed just like a normal one after the last couple of years. So fine. This is their normal one where it's just like, you know what you're going to get, and that's fine. So that's all good. We should jump into some of the winners. I don't know. Where should we start?
Maybe we could start from, I guess. You call it. You call it.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to go to the bottom of this list and start with supporting actor, because I think that's the order that it was the show. The show kind of went in where we started with the supporting actor role.
Supporting actress. Yeah.
The best actress went to Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Literally no surprise. She swept this entire award season.
Yeah.
So I was expecting, if that didn't happen, we would be fighting. So like, very proud of her.
Yeah. And it was a very, very deserved win for her. Kind of still weirded out the fact that they started with that category first to kick off the show. Don't know what that was about, but it was probably one of the more deeper feels, I guess. I don't know, even though I think, was she one of the people we predicted to win, though, for this category? I'm not sure, but I'm good with it. I thought she did an amazing job, especially considering her career. She's been doing a lot of work, not on television and stuff like that, not television, but on film. She's done a lot of Broadway stuff. So I'm glad that she's got this opportunity and she ran away with it. I mean, she was going against what, Emily Blunt, Daniel Brooks, America Ferrera, and Jodie Foster. I think we were kind of looking, I think both of us, maybe a bit more Daniel Brooks winning it based on her role in Color Purple. I think to me she might have had a bit more presence compared to La Divine. But guess what? I'm happy. Either one of these black women won, I would have been fine. And I'm happy she got it. So yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. That animated short film was, I guess, The War Is Over, inspired by the music of John Lennon and Yoko Ono. There were a lot of, on this topic of war, there are a lot of acceptance speeches, like talking about Palestine and the conflict, mostly calling for a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw a lot of the actors, well, some of them wearing pins. I don't know kind of flower word, but they're wearing pins symbolizing that they want a ceasefire. You had, I think the one of the winners, when we'll get to it, from Zone of Interest, talked about it. You know, we had one of the directors from Ukraine talking about the conflict there and stuff like that. So a lot of these speeches were similarly in line on this topic of war and conflict. I haven't seen the short. It probably played at Cannes, or Sundance, and a little difficulty. We kind of usually get into, we're watching everything at these festivals, but hopefully, you know, now that it's been nominated for an Oscar, I can get an opportunity to actually watch it.
Yeah. All right. So the animated feature film went to The Boy and the Heron. Not shocked by this, but have you watched this movie? I don't remember if you watched it or not.
It's like, I haven't, and I really want to. I really want to.
I have friends who watched it, and they were like, they didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And they watched these movies. Like, the studio really, like, they're into it. So, I don't know what to make of that.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Ghibli and Miyazaki films. It's just that the only theater near me that plays it is, like, all the way downtown. And I have to really think about how badly do I actually want to go watch. I have to go to the art theater to watch some of these projects. But I want to watch it. Like, all these movies were good. You know, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams. Of course, I think everybody assumed the two odds on favorite were going to be The Boy and Heron and Spider-Man Across the Universe. Yeah. But I think Spider-Man Across the Universe probably should have been up there for Best Picture, but, you know, it is what it is. So... of course, starting with ramping up categories for writing, Best Original Screenplay went to Anatomy of a Fall. I think this is one of the movies that kind of came out of left field for, like, both of us as far as our enjoyment. I remember you talking on podcasts repeatedly or in our one-on-one conversations, like, I need to see it. I need to see it.
Yes.
Yeah. Where can I see it? Is it showing here? Is it showing there? And I didn't really, like, hear much buzz about it. I think for me, this came out the same time as Iron Claw, and I heard more about Iron Claw than I did about this movie. But it's through you prodding me and poking me about watching this movie, I was like, if you're kind of like on it about seeing this movie, I should go take a watch. And I enjoyed watching it, so I'm not surprised. One, like, the writing is very, like, we discussed it in the episode on it, like, the writing is wonderfully, wonderfully done.
Yeah, like, I was primed for this. Like, I knew it was going to happen. And to your point, yes, I was very, like, we need to watch this film. Like, everyone is talking about it. And maybe because, I don't know, you know, there's different circles of film. What is it? How do you call it? Film, internet, film, Twitter, film, YouTube. Like, there's different sectors of it. So, like, sometimes you might hear about something and sometimes you might not until, like, it's too late. Like, I'm assuming that people who, like, are involved in the film world at all don't know any of these movies, and they're just like, we don't know, maybe we just showed up for the red carpet, we just wanted to see what everyone was wearing and then whatever. Like, I don't know, because these are movies that, like, barely played in theaters, you know what I'm saying? Like, it makes sense if people are not familiar, but this film was so good, and it's because of the writing. Like, people, it's a courtroom drama, people are talking constantly, so the writing in this is so amazing, and I'm just really grateful that they won. Like, I'm really happy about this. Like, very pleased.
Yeah.
Moving on from that, the writing for adapted screenplay went to Cord Jefferson for American Fiction. So exciting. I was really happy. I was very happy about this. This made my little heart sing.
Yeah, I'm happy for Cord, you know, especially being a lot for Black talent, whether you're behind the screen or front screen or a writer, even him coming from a book, you know, and then getting the buzz and it becoming an adapted screenplay. A lot of times, like we've spoken about it, the book to film adaptation is usually a bit rough. But yeah, I'm really happy for him. Like, I think this book, this movie in particular, came like an out of nowhere hit for a lot of people. I know it resonated for us a lot as Black creatives as well, and seeing how the industry kind of functions and stuff like that when it comes to these thoughts and ideas. But yeah, I'm like finding out, like hearing it win the best adapted screenplay, I was like, dang, I probably want to watch this movie again. It was one of those, like, it came out of left field with so much adulation and praise and everything. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. For makeup and hairstyling, it's a movie you got to see. I didn't have a chance to. Well, actually, I'm just going to knock it out because it won these next three categories back to back. Poor Things won for makeup and hairstyling, production design, and costume design. Looking at the stills, looking at the photos, and looking how a bit surreal and off-kilter it was. I'm not surprised. I know some people were assuming like Dune would win for one. Not Dune or Barbie or Oppenheimer probably win one of these categories. But, you know, Poor Things said all the below-line categories, now we got that. And I know you watched it, the movie, so you could probably talk more about this than I can.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because before, I feel like we made predictions before we had seen some of these films. But before we had seen some of these films, my predictions were actually Barbie. I thought Barbie was going to wrap it up with costume, production, and hair and makeup, because if you've seen the movie, like, you know, like, all of that stuff is very, very well done. So when I saw Poor Things, I was like, which is kind of like rated R Barbie, like it's dealing with similar themes. So it's interesting that these two movies were kind of going kind of neck to neck in certain categories, just because it's like kind of very familiar. They're kind of similar in some ways. The production design is phenomenal in this movie, in Poor Things, and they built it all on sets. So it's just like they did with Barbie. They did the same thing. But like, because the world is, it's very, it's like a period film, but it's also like Yorgos Lanthimos. So it's like, it's weird. And so it's giving a lot of character. It's very nuanced in terms of like how things look and the cinematography, but that's a separate thing. But like the costume design was on point, like phenomenal. Yeah. And also the hair, the makeup and hairstyling. Willem Dafoe's in the movie, he has prosthetics, like just Emma Stone's hair and how the hair actually is sort of a character and talks about her own development. Like, I think for Barbie, the thing is that because it's like a known property, we kind of know what the world looks like in a certain way, even though they did a phenomenal job in recreating it on screen. Like, we do know what it looks like. A lot of the clothes were sort of product placement, like you would see like a Chanel bag here or something like that. So yes, it's great, but I think to kind of make something from scratch, or like to make something from like historical clothing and to make it funky and weird and for this film, just, I think that's kind of the reason why it won, because it kind of, it did a little extra work maybe. But yeah, well-deserved. I thought it was deserved. So,
yeah. To me, looking at the stills and scenes I've seen of Poor Things, it looks like a live action Tim Burton movie.
Yes.
Much like Sweeney Todd. So that, like, that same. So yeah. So I can. So just building off of that and being, like I said, somewhat surreal and off kilter with their designs, and like you said, but still trying to make them real world, which is kind of what he does in his movies. Yeah, it deserved it all the way for these three categories.
Yep. All right. Our international feature film went to The Zone of Interest. This is where Jonathan Glazer talked about Palestine, the director of the film. No surprise, this, and especially because we just recently reviewed it, like, we know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, the success of it and how, like, we talked about how raw and emotional it is. I mean, the only other film I did see in this international category, I literally saw it before the Oscars, was Perfect Days. It's a Japanese film about a janitor, basically, like, the simple things in life that he enjoys and stuff like that. Very beautiful picture. But I do think the emotional weight of what's, like we said, like, what's happening in the world helped Zone of Interest a lot further in garnering attention for the project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing to discredit. All the international pictures are wonderfully, wonderfully done. The next winner of the night was Robert Downey Jr. for actor in a supporting role. Like, people are kind of two sides about him winning it because they already assume, like, he's a big star, you know. And some people are like, post Iron Man, he kind of needed to do legitimate acting to legitimize him as an actor, which I can kind of see both ways. You've seen a lot of the actors in who do Marvel movies kind of speak out on the chance because of how their contracts are and their suit schedule for these Marvel projects. They really don't get the freedom to adventure out and play different things. But yeah, I thought it was warranted. I mean, like, this, once again, this was one of those deep categories as well. You had Sterling K. Brown, you had Robert De Niro, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and of course, Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Like, I felt like this category is probably the most, you couldn't tell who was going to win for this award at all.
Yeah, so I felt like this was completely deserved. Like, this is, Robert Downey Jr. has had such a long career. Like, yeah. And he's a really good actor. So even though, yes, he's a big star, that doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve a win. Like,
yeah.
Why would, like, if you did a great job in a movie, like, you should definitely deserve the consideration and a possibility to win. Plus, he's been sweet pea swept all the awards this season. So, like, I guess, again, it's like who, the commentary is more like who is actually paying attention. Because if you're paying attention, you kind of already know who's going to win. Which is not, it's actually one of the things I don't like about award season and Oscars and stuff, is that it is kind of predictable. And
yeah,
more people don't get enough chances to win. I don't like that piece of it. So maybe we do something there. But in terms of, like, did he do an amazing job in Oppenheimer? Absolutely. He absolutely deserved it. And honestly, everyone in that category deserved the recognition they got for their work. Because, again, last year was stacked with great movies and great performances. So he just pulled it out the bag. And I think it was warranted.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our next category, which is visual effects. And that went to Godzilla Minus One. Did not see this movie, so don't know.
Yeah, this movie is, like, I'll try to describe it. You know, everybody knows Nolan loves using practical effects in his movies. Japan kind of does that. This movie has, like, a lot of practical effects, using scale models and stuff, a lot of visual effects. The director of the project, he kind of said, yeah, I'm not going to let anybody know the budget of this project, because then, basically, between VFX and physical effects, those companies that specialize in that will kind of get screwed. Because that's how Hollywood works when it comes to VFX and visual effects. They kind of want the cheapest option. So he's like, yeah, I'm not going to tell anybody how much it costs to do those things. Yeah, my only critique of it, of course, when you have a movie like this with a lot of destruction, it was going to win. Going against the creator. Creator was very, because it was dealing with a very sci-fi topic, it was a lot more CGI, a lot more computer generated. But Godzilla won because it was that mix of both. My only concern is Oscars, where predominantly to show your subscription based. Like, you have to be online to watch it. ABC owns the network. Yes, Abbott Elementary is going to come on like 10:30, but you own the network. You could push back time slots. There's nothing stopping you. I don't like the fact, especially in this one, Japanese people trying to speak English, and they're taking their time so they say everything correctly, you know what they're saying, and you play that damn music to rush them off the stage. I did not like that shit. I thought that was really disrespectful. Like to me, that moment was one of probably the most biggest negative of the Oscars. Clearly, you have people whose English is not their first language speaking to an American audience, and then you kind of rush them off the stage as they're struggling to get their speech, acceptance speech done. I thought that was really unfair.
Yeah, they did that last year, too, with the people who did RRR. Yeah. They just played them off.
Yeah.
We have to figure this out, Oscars. Like, at least, like, if you are on some time constraints, you need to manage the time better. Like, that really just is what it is. Because, you know, people are working really hard, and this is, like, the moment of their career. Like, let them have their moment. I wish I was running. I was in there just to be like, so we're going to do some time management. That's our first lesson of the day. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they can cut out Jimmy Kimmel. They don't need him that much. And give them extra time, you know? Hey.
Right.
The next award was for film editing. Of course, Jennifer Lame won for Oppenheimer. I mean, it was obvious Oppenheimer is gonna get this award. Like especially to me, that dream sequence when he's thinking about how that scientific world works in his head, and you have like the particles floating and how it's cutting rapidly to him, and those highlighted moments of tension, particularly near the end where he's dealing with the results of the bomb. Or not just that, when he's in that room and they're questioning him, like the frenetic pacing of it and the subtlety of it as well. It's like a wonderful blend. Like, I want to see like Jennifer's reel of like her sequences in cutting this movie so bad. Like, yeah, I'm not like the pacing in this movie as far as editing was perfect. Like, you couldn't ask anything better.
And that's the thing, like, if you're going to make a long movie, I feel like how you pace it is so important, and that's all down to editing, really, because it's like you have, when I was watching it, at least I was super engaged, even though I knew that it was a long film. And so I think she did such an amazing job at just like making so many of those sequences feel really full of tension, like especially during the Trinity test. That's one of the best, to me, that's one of the best sequences in like that's one of the best sequences in cinema history, just like, because you can, like, all of those moments were just so, like, you can just feel it. And then how everything kind of came together, it was just such a well done, just that sequence alone should have won an Oscar. Like, it was great. So, yes, to me, that made sense. Like, I was like, yeah, there were certain categories where I'm like, I know who's going to wrap this up. Because, obvious. Okay. So documentary short film went to The Last Repair Shop. Did you see this film? I did not.
But I do know the director, for one of the directors for it, Brandon Powerfoot, he also won, I think, in 2021 for this same category for The Queen of Basketball. So yeah, it looks like he's like back, like, I guess, with two Oscar wins for like two movies. Like, and I think it's really hard for documentary filmmakers to find that foothold, because a lot of attention is really not given to them. It's mostly the film festival circuit, you know, and then that's it. You don't really get, or it might pop on TV on like Nat Geo or whatever, but you don't really get the big cinematic run like a lot of pictures are. And in fact, for him, you know, as a Ben Proudfoot person of color, you know, two Oscars in this category for both projects back to back, nothing but praise and success for him. So, of course, another documentary that won was 20 Days in Metropole. Like I said, documentaries are also always tough to watch. But it talks about, but it's basically the director of it is from Ukraine, mm-hmm. and he's basically documenting his experience as that situation and the invasion is going on with him and his colleagues in Mariupol about February and March of 2021 during the initial onslaught mm-hmm. of Russia's invasion to Ukraine. And like to film that personally and then put that out, like that's
really one dangerous, but like yes, very intense. Oh my god, I want to see that. I hope that comes out somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so cinematography went to Oppenheimer, Hoyt-Finn Hoytema. Again, who was surprised? Like, I wasn't. And there were some good films that were nominated in this. Like, the cinematography from a couple of these films were, like, really, really good. But I don't know. It's that Chris Hoyt. Hoytema. Combo. There's something in that. That's just, I don't know. It might be elite or something. I don't know.
And cinematography is one of those weird topics, like we've discussed it before at length here. It's the fact that people assume cinematography, they go right to the director, not knowing that's another person's job of kind of figuring out how the director's visual aesthetic works on camera and stuff like that. But I do think, Nolan and Hoyt, like, they make, like, the perfect team. I think they visually work well with each other, you know, and that's honestly the thing about filmmaking is usually when you, as a creative, when you find those people you work with, you're always gonna like, there's like a silent communication going on where I don't even gotta ask. I know exactly what you're gonna want. You know what I'm gonna want. We're able to work wonderfully. And this project, because even the editor, Jennifer, said the same thing about working with Nolan and other projects. Like they have this history and they know how everybody functions, and that's beautiful to witness. The winner for live action short was The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar by Wes Anderson and Steve Rails. It's par for the course. It's a Wes picture, but in short format. I did like the take of it, as whereas the character is very self-narrating the story. I thought it was really inventive with some of the, like, this movie, I think, relies on, like, Texas switches a lot more than, I think, Wes' other projects as scene transitions. Most of the time, his regular movies let them flow naturally. But, yeah, I loved it. I loved this movie.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know if Wes has won an Oscar before. I'm sure he has for something. I just can't recall exactly what it is. But, like, in recent years, he hasn't even been nominated. So I was really surprised that he, first of all, not that this was in the category. I guess I just wasn't paying that much attention to this. Sorry. But like, I'm happy that he won because I really do love Wes Anderson's movies. Wasn't crazy about Asteroid City, but I did love the short film. I really did. So I'm like, yes, right there.
The correct Wes Anderson movie was not made.
Exactly.
The next winner, sound with Zone of Interest. Like we said, talking about it, like the sound design in this movie was perfect. Like minimal orchestral pieces. The focus on it is the violence that's going on behind these people's walls, the screams, sometimes gunfire, and like, perfect.
Yeah, made sense. Wanted it to win. Glad it did.
Yeah.
Okay, so the music and the original score category went to Ludwig Göransson for Oppenheimer. Again, no surprise there. Ludwig is racking these Oscars up. Okay, he is racking them up. Like this Black Panther, like everything that he's been working on, he's just like, pass me the award, please. He's really killing it.
Ludwig is like the modern day John Williams. He's on that, you know, like you mentioned, the blast stuff of Disney with Black Panther. You know, even beyond that, producing for artists on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, he is really like knocking it on out of the park. And he always, like, I love listening to Ludwig's orchestral pieces because he always finds sounds that you don't commonly hear and makes them work beautifully. Like, Ludwig is on it. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. For best original song, Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas, they both won for What Was I Made For from the Barbie soundtrack. It is very moving song. No notes. Like, it is a very, like, listen to that song. Like, don't even think about Barbie and just listen to that song. Like, I think everybody in their life has been in that mindset, like, questioning their purpose and their goal, you know, and in this song, she's talking about looking back on, you know, how she used to be. So, like, everybody can relate to that, you know, and that's at its core, I'm hitting my mic too much, but that was at its core what Barbie was really about, like, what is your purpose and what are you here for? And I think that song encapsulated that project 100%.
Yeah. Also, Billie Eilish and Phineas, second Oscar win. Like, Billie Eilish is younger than me. So that is crazy. But I think her and Phineas are good at, like, picking projects that are gonna do really well, like, to collaborate with, like, this James Bond. Like, it just feels like they have their pulse on something. So that's cool. And I think their collaboration is really special as siblings to be able to continue to produce music for films. Like, and I think Billie Eilish is one of those artists who's actually a very, like, cinematic music artist anyways, just inherently. So I'm proud of her. Go girl. Like, keep racking him up. I will support you. Like, the song to me was fine, but, like, I don't even care. Like, do it.
Yeah. Look, as long as I'm Just Ken did not win.
Right.
Like, I don't know why people were taking a throwaway joke song that initially wasn't even going to be in the movie until Greta was like, no, this shit is hilarious. We're doing it. And it got put in. And you saw, even watching Ryan's performance, like, every award leading up to this night or last night, every time it won for best original song, Ryan was like, oh my gosh, really? Like, he's shocked at the stupidity of it. Like, you could tell he was dreading at some point that he was gonna have to perform it at the Oscar stage. and he did. And that performance is funny because everybody kind of realized, like, I saw people on Twitter like, y'all forgot that Ryan Gosling is, like, a triple threat. He's, like, Ryan Gosling is, like, classic Hollywood dance, act, sing.
Yes.
You know, people forget, like, that Mickey Mouse Club group that had Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Justin Timberlake, JC Sage. You have numerous voice actors, numerous other artists who have bands. They were all talented. Like, Ryan Gosling is, like, old Hollywood in the modern day. You know, so he was always going to do his thing with Barbie, with the singing and acting and stuff like that in that project.
Okay, so actor in a leading role went to Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer.
Yes.
So no surprise there. So happy for him. Honestly, to me, way overdue.
And is way overdue the fact that him and Nolan have been working together. Yeah. It's like, hey, you're one of my favorite guys to cast in movies, but I don't want you to lead right now. Like, if you're my boy and you say that, like, I'm like, I thought I was your man's. But he finally got that shot, you know, I guess most people, like, first exposure to him was, you know, the Batman movies with directed by Nolan. For me, it was, like, 28 Days Later with Danny
Boyle. Yeah, mine's a Red Eye. You remember Red Eye?
But yeah, so he's had a long career, like, in this past couple years, like, past 10 or so years, between, you know, of course, Batman stuff, and then his stuff was Peaky Blinders. His profile has really grown, and him winning this award is kind of the culmination of all that work he's been doing. So, really proud, really happy
for him. So proud.
Yeah. And of course, following that win for leading actor, Christopher Nolan won with Oppenheimer for Best Director. Not a surprise at all.
Not a surprise, but talk about something being overdue. Like,
yeah.
I was so pleased. I was like, willing it into existence. I was like, please let Chris win, because he has just been doing such substantial, great work for so many years. Like, the consistency that he has put out over these years, like, doing things like, I remember when Inception came out and everybody was like, what is this even about? Like, people were talking about it for months and, like, trying to figure it out for months. Like, creating moments, not just movies, but, like, cultural moments. Like, that, yeah, that means something. And I'm just so happy that he finally, you know, got his opportunity to be recognized for all of the great work that he's been doing.
Yeah, he was on that precipice of kind of, not a shot, but he was, and I wouldn't say in danger, but in danger is kind of work, the way entertainment works now with basketball or sports. You know, if you don't have the championships, you're not, you know, successful. You know, mm-hmm. movies, you know, post Marvel were like, oh, if your movie hasn't made these amount of dollars, you're not successful, mm-hmm. or you haven't won an award, you're not successful. You know, he was in danger of being how people nowadays kind of regard Martin Scorsese. Amazing director, but you ain't won shit. Like, he was in mm-hmm. danger of entering that realm. And I think it's so apropos that, you know, he, the person who announces his name and gives him his award is Spielberg. Like, it's like a passing of a torch kind of thing. Like, I was that dude, you're that dude now. Like, that was perfect to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is like a passing of a torch. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah. That's true. Oh, bless. Okay, so why does this keep doing this? Okay. Actress in a lead. My phone keeps closing. Okay. Actress in a leading role went to Emma Stone for Poor Things. I knew it was gonna happen. Mm-hmm. I just was hoping that it wouldn't, and not because, and I've said this before, I think Emma Stone's a great actress. I think her performance in Poor Things was phenomenal. I completely understand this. It makes sense. I think this makes more sense than her winning in 2017 for La La Land. I don't know why that happened. This was the, if she was going to win an Oscar for something, it should have been this for this one, and it is. Mm. However, I don't know. And it's not just me. Like, I've watched other people's commentary about the Oscars. I think the feeling was that people really wanted Lily Gladstone to win. Like, and I did too. Like, I wanted that so badly. It's just that the way things were going throughout these last few months, it just, Emma Stone was just, she was the one who was capturing it. Like, she was racking all these awards up. So I was like, I don't think it's happening for Lily this year, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. I feel the same way. And I think part of what happened with Lily is, of course, people complaining about Killers of the Flower Moon was a wonderful movie. Mm-hmm. Point Blank Period is a wonderful movie.
Yes.
But then you have the non-film people who watch the names like, oh, Scorsese, I know who that is. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, I know who that is. Watching the movie and then complaining about the length, and then also complaining about her. Like, I saw a lot of press and leading up to all the award shows kind of minimizing her role. Mm-hmm. As like, oh, she's like a bystander just waiting to be the next person killed in a mass killing. You know, to belittle an actor or an actress's role to that degree does a lot. You know, mm-hmm. yes, just being nominated for this movie will probably help her career and give her other roles. Yeah. It already has, because she, I think she has two movies that she's working on at the moment. But to do that and cost somebody a win is, I don't like it, especially knowing how the selection process of the Oscars goes. Is people who work in these categories, like actors, nominate actors, you know, like, 3 or 4 of them pick, okay, this is the pool. Oh, we're going to whittle it down, and these are the 4 or 5. I know all the amount of movies that we've seen throughout the year, we haven't even seen some of the movies that are nominated for the Oscars, you know, the short films, documentaries. I know all the people in the who have votes to vote for the Oscars have not seen all these pictures. And so, and that probably like went into it, like, oh, I heard about Emma's role in, you know, Poor Things. Yeah, sure, I'll vote for it. That kind of thing. So, yeah. kind of sucks. I think there should be a fan vote component to the Oscars.
Yes.
You know,
and like, we're going to vote.
Some of these weird, like, you'll get some off-kilter, unexpected wins, but I don't think people will complain about it that much. Do you want to go for it? You can go for it. The big award of the night. I'm going to let you go for it.
Okay, so Best Picture went to Oppenheimer.
I was going to do a drum roll, but dang.
Sorry. I think there's a delay because I saw you do this after I started talking.
You're cool.
You want to do it again? We can do it again.
No, it's fine. You can roll with it.
Okay. Okay, sorry. For all those who are just listening, Dale was doing the drum roll silently. So I missed it, but that's okay. Oppenheimer, Oppenhomies, there we go. Makes so much sense. How do you feel? What, it's been months. It's been a couple of months since we've seen Oppenheimer. Now that it's won, you know, the big prize, what are your reflections on the movie?
What? It is weird. It is so weird because I've seen every movie on this list. So that's the right thing. And I can find different things as to why everybody should have won this award. Mm-hmm. Like in the Best Picture category, I think this is one of the first few years where I don't think there was a bad picture at all. Like there are some pictures, some years are like, oh, you wonder why are two of these categories there? Right. But this year, like everybody deserves to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the Best Picture category isn't a culmination of all the other awards, actor, actress, you know, sound. It's a culmination of all those awards. So even if you might not have won for those, the fact that you were nominated increases your odds for Best Picture. And Oppenheimer was nominated for a lot of these categories. I would have been fine with any picture winning this. I do think the only two movies I think that would have been highly unlucky to probably win this would have probably been American Fiction and Past Lives. Because that's the industry's history when dealing with non-Caucasian talents. You know, Past Lives is entirely, you know, Japanese, you know, that kind of thing. And American Fiction is an experience that only Black people can probably relate to. So I think those are only two that would have been hard to win this award. But every other movie, you know, would have won, and I would have had no problem with it as well.
Yeah, I feel like this year, and we've already talked about this multiple times, that 2023 was like a great year for film. Mm-hmm. And I think, to be honest, and I know there are other people who have like very different opinions about like what movie meant the most to them and how, and their experience and how they kind of related to it when they watched it. Oppenheimer for me was the movie of 2023. Like that.
Yeah.
Movie. And the thing is like I cried in Past Lives. I loved American Fiction. I thought Barbie was fun for like the first 30 minutes. Like the Zone of Interest was phenomenal, and Anatomy of a Fall was phenomenal. Like all of these movies were just really, really good. And I've had like a very specific experience with each of them. I just think that like when I left the theater after watching Oppenheimer, I think that it just like hit me really hard, like,
yeah,
because it just felt so relevant. I guess that's the reason why it like stayed with me months, you know, as the months passed, like it just felt, and actually got even more relevant actually as the months passed. Yeah. So yeah, it just had such a huge effect on me because it just felt like, I don't know, like, this, like, we're here, we got here because of like things like happened back in the day, and to have it all like documented and laid out, and just how Chris and his whole team put everything together and all of the performances, it was just, I don't know. It was just like one of those movies that you just had to see and you just had to like be a part of. And culturally, I just felt like it made such a huge impact, especially partnered with the Barbie thing. Like that was a whole moment. And so it just, to me, it just felt like the movie of the year. So it made the most sense. Like to me, like this was a movie for like the once in a couple of years where it's like, this actually deserved Best Picture. Mm-hmm. 'Cause the other movies in the past years, like they were good, but like they weren't this. So it just, this actually felt incredibly deserving. Like the moment, the film, all of it came together and it totally deserved this. Like I can't, if anything else would have won, I would have been fine with it because all those movies are great, but I just feel like this was the absolute right choice.
Yeah, I mean, I left Oppenheimer like, dang. Like, there are very few movies where I go like, dang, I can't wait to see that again.
Yeah.
Like, Oppenheimer, I was like, dang, I want to go see this again. And every time I want to go see, like, theaters are packed, can't get a ticket. So yes. I'm like, oh, when is this movie coming out at home or streaming or whatever platform so I can watch? Like, there was so much anticipation for me to have an opportunity to watch this movie again. And it's still kind of, it is still there, but not a degree, but... Yeah, that movie was the movie of 2023. I think Dune kind of has a bit of that right now with Dune Part 2. I don't know if it's going to sustain, you know, long term. Yeah. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like Oppenheimer, it was a moment. Still is a moment. Like they said when accepting the award, we're living in the repercussions of Oppenheimer's world. So yeah.
Yeah, so that was the Oscars, and I feel like it was pretty good considering what the last couple of years have been, so
yeah.
I'm fine with it. I have issues, but I can't remember what they are right now, so so they're not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Killers of the Flower Moon walked away with absolutely nothing, and I don't like that. I feel like that movie was so good. So I just feel like y'all should have given somebody something. It seemed crazy that like, okay, fine.
De Niro, fine. Like not even De Niro, like Scorsese, he gonna fight somebody one day.
Yeah.
Because the man, I think only has one Oscar win.
Yeah.
One Oscar, he's gonna fight somebody one day. Like I keep giving you guys filet mignon and you guys keep wanting burger. No. He's enough. That old man's gonna fight somebody one day. You know, he goes over and comforts Lily after she loses at the end of the show. Oh, that was touching. Of course, Domingo Coleman and Daniel Brooks go over to Levine Joy after she won her award, and Issa Rae like tweeted like, "All the blacks are celebrating the like stuff like that." Like Jimmy Kimmel, just I hate Jimmy Kimmel so much. Like. I remember at one point, I think John Cena apparently went out there naked to give a presentation as well.
He went as a Ken.
Okay. People were like, "There's oh, how dare you accept being embarrassed like that?" And everybody was like, "Yeah, this guy was a professional wrestler wearing like purple, green, and blue t-shirts and tights. Nothing's gonna embarrass that man, so he's all right." Yeah. But yeah, I think this Oscars this year was a lot better than the last couple years, you know. Agreed. Still pissed off about Angela Bassett and Jamie Lee Curtis from last year, but
we're still mad.
Still mad. Can't get over that. Like, can't get over that.
Yeah,
but it is what
right
it is.
Yeah, it was all right this year.
Yeah. I think next year is also going to be a train wreck. I don't. Looking at what we've seen so far of this year and what's coming out, I don't think there are going to be that many good movies that will hit like the 8, like what is it, 10 of these that were in for Best Picture. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think we're going to be in for a bit of a letdown in 2025 for the Oscars.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to wait and to see what Cannes selection will be, because then that will help me kind of figure out what's going to happen. But honestly, last year was so good that I feel like you can't have like a repeat. Like, I feel like it's only going to happen like once every few years where you have such a great year like this. So,
yeah. All this year has taught me is that we've gotten so much better at picking these movies. I'm gonna start putting money on the Oscars and making some bread, to be honest. Cause not even like me and you really haven't been following the award season wins. Right. But we've been kind of like, all right, that's gonna win this. And we've been on it. Mm-hmm. Like, look, if I'm watching these many movies we make in the podcast and I know what's gonna be hit or not, I'm gonna play some bets on these Oscar win odds, dang it. I'm gonna win some paper. All right, make back the money I spent watching these movies, okay?
So that's a good plan. I support the plan. We have and I'm living for the fact that we watched every single Best Picture nominee. Like, hello, are we? We're kind of amazing. So not to be that person, but
toot our horn, but toot toot.
Toot toot.
So that's a little bit more on the Oscar talk. You know, with the days leading up to the award show, there were kind of whispers and murmurs of an accusation of plagiarism. Simon Stevenson, the writer of Disney Pixar's Luca and also Paddington 2, kind of sent messages to the WGA to director, voicing concerns over plagiarism from Alex Payne's of Holdovers. This news came out like a day or two before the Oscars, and it was really concerning. And Stevenson was referring to a play he wrote called Fresco, which kind of deals with the same subject matter of a 15-year-old patient getting stuck in a hospital, getting looked over by a world-weary doctor, which kind of works with Holdovers. It's a teacher, you know, tired of the world, being stuck with a pupil. And the thing with Fresco is it was, I guess, in 2013, was on the blacklist at number 3 of, and if you don't know, the blacklist is a list of projects that people submit as far as screenwriters to be picked up. And the fact that it was top 3 means that it's probably crossed a lot of hands, because you could also read a lot of these scripts online if when you sign up for it. So, and he voices concerns about the similarities of those projects. Both Alexander Payne, Alexander Payne declined to comment. But Stevenson did submit his emails to Variety too. And it kind of created back and forth between him and the WGA all through Oscar week. And they also, he went to correspondence with, of course, the writers of Variety and everything else. And I don't know how to feel about this. The fact that this news drops like on the eve of Oscars, when Holdovers came out, what, December? November?
Mm.
And not a murmur. Nothing came out then. Oh, you about to win some awards? Nah, I'm coming for your money. Feels kind of a bit disingenuous to me. And not just that, there have been a lot of times in Hollywood where people have come up with the same concepts or ideas. We had, what, Friends with Benefits, and that had...
No Strings Attached.
No Strings Attached. And the thing with that is, both the people who were in strong roles in that movie were in relationships with their co-stars as well. So, you know, you have... It's not the first time, and there's a theory for it. Like, they call it multiple discovery or simultaneous invention, where people, multiple people, it's mostly accommodated with scholars and inventors, kind of come up with the same concept and idea at the same time. So that could be one of those cases. But I'm kind of skeptical with it, knowing that this news drops. Like, the original article came out about this plagiarism March 9th, you know? So that's kind of really close on the nose. Hey, Saturday before the Oscars, this news comes out. I don't know how I feel about that one right there.
Yeah, me either. I feel like, because again, it's like so many people have similar ideas, some experiences. Like, I think The Holdovers wasn't based on, I think Alexander Payne's growing up, his adolescence in that kind of New England school, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I think that's what I heard. So like, you can't tell me that my own, if that's true, you can't tell me that my own experience is plagiarized. Like, yeah. You know, so I don't know how I feel about that one.
Yeah, but it's odd, you know. I mean, here's the thing. When you're a writer, and here's the thing also, when you're a writer and you hear about these contests, oh, submit your scripts here, your scripts here, kind of should have a bit of a trepidation, because studio might potionally snatch it, and that happens. Mm-hmm. There have mm-hmm. many cases that have come out the last couple years where it's happened, but it is probably true, but my concern is also the timing of it. That's the thing. Had it come out with when the movie first dropped or a couple weeks after that, he said he went to WGA and they did nothing. And now he took it, the story went further. Like, if the WGA did nothing and like the opening first couple months of it being out, at that point, all right, they're giving y'all time to like figure out, you know, read both scripts, do something. At least, you know, tell the distributor I need to get a co-writing credit if they're gonna pull material from my stuff. But none of that happened. Oh, I'm gonna wait till Oscar night to drop this bombshell, you know? Yeah.
Yep. So, moving on to what we watched. Dale.
I did mention in our Oscars talk, I did watch, I was watching Perfect Days, which was the Japanese selection for international feature film. Yeah, it's about just enjoying the simple things in life. You like, and I think especially now with everything going on in the world, I think you kind of do need a picture like that in a way. And I think a lot more people should do that. And at the time, I was also being like marathoning and binging a lot of Dragon Ball Z, a lot of Dragon Ball. Because if you're familiar with it, the creator of that franchise, Akira Toriyama, passed away. And if you're like a boy from like the age of like 13 to like 30 plus, that's your shit. Like that's like one of the few shows for men that like cross generations, like cross two or three generations. So yeah, and it's also not just that, knowing how influential his work was in Western media, their shows and movies that pull from his stuff, their other animation projects done in Japan and everywhere else that pull from his concepts and ideas. But yeah, so I was just like, I took it back to the beginning and like was watching like Dragon Ball and stuff for a bit the other day. So yeah.
That's good. I didn't watch any movie. I'm still working on the movie that I was supposed to be watching. What is it called? The Souvenir. Still working on it. But I watched someone else watch, because I do this sometimes. I watched someone else react to Climax, the movie by Gaspar Noé. No? Well, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. No. Gaspar Noé. No. The film bros are going to come for me. Anyways, so it's like, it was a very popular movie. I think it came out like a few years ago. In like the film internet space, everybody was talking about this movie, so I watched it, and it is really good because it's like handheld. It's about these dancers who like take some, who are like drinking sangria, and they all just go absolutely crazy. It's such a weird thing, but like I guess Gaspar is known to do very strange. He's a French filmmaker.
Yeah.
Strange thing. So, but from what I watched, it did look insane. Like it looked insane, but it also seemed like a movie like you would watch it with your friends and like have a good time. So I don't know. I kind of want to do that, just because it just seems like, how did a movie that started off with dancers like act, like really working? Like these dancers were phenomenal. They were great. I loved that. How did we get to where we ended up in the film? It just is like, is everyone okay? Like, what happened in this building? So yeah, it looked good. So I actually might watch it if I find it somewhere. But just from the reaction, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll watch all of Gaspar movies. I heard some stuff that he did in some movies, and I was like, I don't like that. So I'll see. But this seemed interesting enough. Yep. All right. So that is it from us this week. We hope that you're all doing well. Make sure to check out all of our social media. Support us if you can. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Au revoir.